So this is Criterion Now, right this minute, huh?
Yeah, and a coincidence. I'm talking to you a lot lately, especially today.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wasn't planned this way, but I guess we're it's the Keith and Aaron show this Sunday. So so this is Criterion Now, episode 3, and you've already heard Keith Enright, my good friend from Criterion Completion, the Completionist, as he's coined. And this is the first episode with a duo, maybe the last episode with a duo. We had a couple issues. Actually, first we had four, then we had three, and somebody got let you know that Doug got sick. Doug McCambridge was going to be on. Our good friend Doug. Sorry, Doug. I hope you're feeling better. We'll get him back on at some point. So it's just you and I doing a duo, Keith.
And then there were two. Only Agatha Christie knows where this ends up.
I know. Yeah, let's keep an eye behind your back during this episode.
Exactly.
No, I'm sure that's part of the deal with podcasting. Things come up. So, but if we're going to do a duo, I think you and I can probably hold our own, hopefully.
Well, people let us know.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. So, okay, well, we have, this is episode 3, and I should kind of address something that I've been dancing around a little bit, and as in the end of the year episode, both of them actually, it was mentioned that Ryan stepped away from podcasting, and that's kind of left a couple holes in the episode lineup, and you might have noticed we haven't done Newsstand in a couple, 3 months, I think really not since, I don't know if we covered 2017 releases at all, if we did maybe January.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, so that's been a hole. So in the meantime, until that show comes back, we're going to try to fill some of those holes here. So we will talk about the April releases that were just announced within a week and a half ago. We'll talk about Filmstruck, as always. We have a lot to talk about. Maybe it's a good thing it's just you and I. The one thing I found with a two-week gap is there's a lot of stuff that happens in the Criterion world. So if you're going to keep up on it, you have to stay pretty regular. So how's it going, Keith?
Not too bad. Getting over some nasty crud over the last couple of weeks. So if you hear me cough, just like I'm about to do, forgive me for that. But been spending a lot of time finishing up hour 7 of the Criterion Completion podcast. So you and I are well-versed in talking to each other recently, as we just said. Mm-hmm. We're recording this on Sunday. I don't even know what the date is, 29th? Recording this on Sunday, and I hope to get my podcast up yet today, so we'll see. So hopefully people somewhat enjoy hearing our two voices.
Yeah, this show is going to go up Sunday, so there'll be a twofer. But we recorded that, even though we had some scheduled bumps. I think we recorded that about 2-3 weeks ago, that right?
Early in the month, right before I went off to Dallas to work and then got sick. So it's been a long time coming, so I'm glad to get it done.
I'm glad you're feeling better. I've had a little bit of the crud too that I've been fighting through, and I haven't quite succumbed. So, when we recorded that, this show didn't exist, and I think you asked me, and I don't know if this made the final cut, but I guess that there'd be two episodes in the can by the time this came out. So
yeah, so depending on what order people listen to these in, it'll make sense or not.
Yeah, I think we did pretty well.
Oh, we did.
All right, well, shall we get right into it? Like I said, we have a lot to talk about. So
let's do it.
And I don't have to go too much into the panel, so because it's just you. Hello,
yes.
Keith.
I'll raise my hand.
That's great on a podcast.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, So we're going to start off with an in memoriam section. We haven't had the opportunity. Not that it's something that one looks forward to, but it is something that happens. Especially 2016, we lost a ton of people, and it became kind of a running. Well, I don't want to say a running joke, but just a running theme through, especially towards the end of the year, as we lost some major figures.
It's true.
But I figured with this being a current show that we should kind of memorialize the people that we've lost and talk about them, and we happen to lose a couple Criterion folks this week, so I'll just jump right in. We lost John Hurt, which and you know, no pun intended, but this one did hurt. I don't know why. I just well, his voice, of course, iconic voice. You recognize him. You don't have to see the face, and you recognize him. In fact, we watched Jackie yesterday, and my wife said, and he was noticeably older. This was, of course, probably why he's fighting the cancer.
Right.
And my wife said she didn't recognize him, if not for the voice, that she might not have known who he was.
But, well, that's true, and you know, his voice is something that's you know, extremely prevalent, especially in his animation work, of course, with Watership Down and the Plague Dogs. But even, you know, something like The Elephant Man, you're not looking at John Hurt throughout that movie. You're listening to his voice and his mannerisms and all that. So I have to admit, this one doesn't hurt all that much for me. For some reason, John Hurt has just been one of those guys that you respect and like. But, you know, I went through his filmography this morning, and I have to sadly admit, I think I've only seen about six of his films.
Really?
Yeah, he's just one of those guys that has seemed to be ubiquitous over the years, but I haven't seen a lot, and you know, that's unfortunate, I guess. Maybe I'll rectify that at some point.
Well, he does kind of balance. He does some indie work, and mainstream studio stuff, especially later in his career. I think just because of that voice, he was notable. But he's on three Criterion releases. You already mentioned Watership Down. He plays Hazel, which so that the way Hazel's character, I just won't get into that. But so that might be why I was, you know, kind of comparing the actor with the character and their genesis. But yeah, great voice actor. He was also in Heaven's Gate and Stephen Frears The Hit, which was a long time ago. Of course, 1984, and
never saw it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the year I graduated, but I never saw it.
Yeah, I would recommend it, especially, well, you know, we can try to dance around it, but we're going to probably have to address the political situation that's going on right now. But, you know, it's kind of a timely film, too, based on, so I'll kind of sort of dance around, but not too carefully.
Right,
with that.
Right.
But,
well, I had on my list Midnight Express and Scandal, but I just realized that I'm missing two apparent obvious choices. I'm missing Alien and Spaceballs. So those that brings it up to eight for me.
Okay, yeah. And he was in, the Harry Potter series. He was in Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy recently, his late career. He was in Melancholia. So that's not a Criterion release, but it's, you know, a Criterion director and kind of in that vicinity. And I think he was... I'm not the biggest Melancholia fan, but I think he was good in that. So, yeah, I guess you could see him as a journeyman character actor, but a quality one.
Definitely.
So, yeah, we'll be missed. And even I actually didn't like his scenes in Jackie. I thought that was a critique. I just didn't think they really belonged or added much. But but it's still good to see him in his, I guess, probably his final performance. Not sure about that. The other one that we lost this week also hurt.
This Emmanuel one hurts more.
Riva, yeah, who I think we more affiliate with Criterion. You know,
absolutely.
Especially her French New Wave origins. Really, Hiroshima Monamour is how she was unknown before that role, and that launched her career. But she was also in Capo. That's one, the Pontecorvo. I haven't seen that one yet. But
I have seen that, and that's a, you know, the movie belongs to Susan Strasberg, but... Emmanuel Riva is very good in it as well.
Yeah, and she was also in Leon Moore and Priest, Jean-Pierre Melville. And I'm actually a big fan of this film. I think it's one of his underappreciated, underknown films. It's actually very different for him, but I think she's excellent. And she was also in Three Colors Blue, where she was a supporting character.
Yes.
And speaking of Hiroshima Monamour, she was, of course, in Amour, and that's probably her career highlight. As far as she was nominated for an Oscar, and she was amazing. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yes, I have. Definitely a nice capstone.
Yeah, difficult movie, but quite a way to cap her career. But she kept working even after that. She's been in a few things, but yeah, she will be missed. And that's two gone already.
Well, I don't want to lose any of my Criterion cred, but I have to admit that for me, both of these paled in comparison to losing Mary Tyler Moore. So,
really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I've often said, if people ever ask me what my childhood crushes were, I always say there's only two people on the list, Mary Tyler Moore in 1961 and Mary Tyler Moore in 1971.
Really? Okay. That's interesting. Of course, Mary Tyler Moore is a huge figure in pop culture, TV culture, especially in the last few decades, and film too. I didn't watch her TV shows, so I do recognize her iconic status as a major celebrity, but this one didn't impact me as much, just because I wasn't. I'm not going to say I wasn't a fan. One of her acolytes.
Living here in downtown Minneapolis, I walk to work every day, and every day I walk past the corner where she threw her hat up in the air at the beginning of her show. So it's something that's always on my mind, and you know, it was a long time coming because she'd been sick for a long time.
Yeah.
But I don't mean to derail everything here. It was just a big deal to me.
No, I mean, have they done anything special on that corner or?
Well, it's all under construction, so there's a statue of her that's actually indoors right now, but there's a lot of flowers and everything around it, so, yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, well, she did do films. She did Ordinary People, which I remember that was a big Oscar backlash kind of movie, but
yes.
I thought she was fine. I thought the movie was fine. I think she did some other things, but yeah, huge loss there, even though to be expected. I think probably all three were somewhat expected, even though they keep private, I guess it sounds like they were all sick.
Yeah.
So anyway, not to start the show on a bummer, but we will miss these three. I'm sure, you know, you talk about 2016, but I'm sure there'll be plenty more that we'll lose this year.
Well, the thing is, and I'll just make this quick. I mean, somebody made the point 2 or 3 years ago that, you know, the modern entertainment world started pretty much after World War II, and most of the people that we know from a celebrity standpoint, you know, us being film buffs, we know a lot from the 20s and 30s, but the general public, mm-hmm. everything kind of starts after World War II, and now we're just getting to that age, and I don't think this is ever really going to slow down, and it's just the fact that the celebrity age has brought a lot of people into our minds, and now they're dying. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's a good point, and you know, the in memoriam section of the Oscars is always filled with familiar faces. I think one thing that's different is social media. So
yeah,
it's talked about, it's commented upon every time we lose somebody. So actually, after we watched Jackie, my wife and I were reflecting on 1994, where we lost Nixon and Kurt Cobain and some others,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was a pretty notable year of losses as well. High profile losses. So it's not, people die, but I think celebrity culture is growing and we're more aware of them, if you agree.
I do.
Of course, I'll never forget Antonioni and Bergman dying on the same day. That was that was crushing.
That was amazing. Amazingly bad.
I know. So, all right, well, let's change the tone a little bit. I guess let's talk about the April releases, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
I have your permission. So these were announced, I guess, a couple weeks ago, and we didn't have a show, so we're just covering them now. But we'll go in order here. We have April 11th, The Young Girls of Rochefort, and is that how you pronounce it?
And good enough for me.
Yeah, and The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. So they're being those two iconic Demi films are being split apart from the Demi box set, which, I have opinions on, but I think they're doing this to align the releases with La La Land, which, of course, is huge.
I think that's pretty obvious, I think, that's what they're doing here. It's a bit of an odd way to go about splitting up such a big box set, especially, you know, with these two movies being aligned and not doing Lola at the same time, because they the three of them do tie together. So, definitely it seems to be an Oscar grab, which I'm fine with. But it's just, it's interesting.
Yeah, they are a business, and they do have to make money.
Sure.
And as somebody, it might have been you guys that pointed out on your year-end show, they have to put out these tentpole releases to sell enough to afford putting out, say, the Executioner or a Tree of Wooden Clogs or something like that that's not going to sell nearly as much. So, I'm okay with that. Of course, I'm not going to buy it. It makes it a cheaper month for me.
Very true.
And they're the same cases as the box set. Of course, the box set has those little slim, what do they call those little sleeve cases?
Slim packs, tiny digipacks. I don't know.
Tiny digipacks. There you go.
That's real catchy, huh?
Teensy tiny. We just coined it. There you go.
Yes.
So I think it's interesting. I like both films, and I think it's worth discovering. So hopefully it'll help bring these to the forefront, and maybe with La La Land as the introduction. So I'm okay with it. It looks like they're the same features. Nothing too out of the ordinary. I
think it's just a straight rip out of the box.
Literally, that's what they did. They just ripped them out of the box and put them
exactly. Which is interesting because, you know, and I don't have any strong feelings one way or another on this, but, you know, some have mentioned that, you know, the theme of that box set with the bright colors and everything, it looks a little odd when it's just on two releases standing alone. You don't quite get that same story or feeling, but you know, again, I'm fine with it.
Me too. And as you said, Lola I think would fit better, but Lola I think is more obscure. I don't think we're not going to see that or Bay Area Angels or Donkey Skin, or definitely not Donkey Skin. So I guess that's April 11th. So we won't probably be buying, you and I won't be buying any Criterions until the 18th, which will be Woman of the Year and Buena Vista Social Club. So I haven't seen Woman of the Year. In fact, it really wasn't on my radar, even though I know George Stevens. I guess I'm a fan of George Stevens. I don't really have too strong of an opinion, but I think he was a good classic Hollywood director. Mm-hmm. So have you seen this one?
I have not, and this is where I kind of bring up one of my opinions again. I'm looking forward to it a lot. The Hepburn and Tracy films that I have seen, like Adam's Rib, which is in the Laserdisc collection, and I've seen Death Set, and I've seen Who's Coming to Dinner, and I'm thinking there's probably one more, but I have not seen this. I'm glad it's coming. I'm glad I'm going to get exposed to it. I'm one of those people that does not find Spencer Tracy or Katharine Hepburn all that compelling, especially separately. So to see this, I think it's nice because it does fit into that small subset of their films that I do like. So anyway, we'll see.
Interesting. Yeah, the Tracy Hepburn combo, that's a big blind spot. I haven't seen Adam's Rib, but I've seen the others that you mentioned, and they're interesting. Spencer Tracy was huge celebrity, but we also know he was a bit of a drunk. I think he was a little ordinary. He was a little ornery.
Yes.
Difficult to work with. He was in a Mad World, and I think that's it for the collection. Not positive.
Well, I just watched him in Fritz Lang's, I'm not going to remember the title. He was in a early 40s Fritz Lang movie. Boy, this is compelling. But I can't remember, but I do remember that Spencer Tracy was just completely out of his element and miscast in the movie. So again, it doesn't help me try to see more of his movies, but I'm looking forward to this.
Was that Fury?
Yes, thank you very much.
The jailbreak one?
Yes.
That's interesting. I actually like Fury quite a bit.
I like the movie quite a bit. I just found Spencer Tracy to be a sore thumb.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember having too much of an opinion. I don't think of Tracy as one of the great. He's not like Orson Welles in the 40s where he just is amazing.
Right.
But I think he's passable and a good classic Hollywood director. There is a documentary about Tracy that also covers the Hepburn overlap, which I think will be interesting. But it's 86 minutes from 1986, the Spencer Tracy Legacy, a tribute by Katharine Hepburn. So, and I'll disagree with you on Hepburn. I think The Lion in Winter and actually Summertime, which is also in the collection, I think she's great. Mary Queen of Scots. off the top of my head. I don't like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
No, not too much. You know, I guess as I want to do, I get a little strident when I'm talking about these things. I think Katharine Hepburn is very good. I just, for me, she doesn't quite reach the venerated status that she has for me.
Well, you didn't call her garbage, so that's progress.
That's right. Well, I don't do that anymore.
that was funny on your year-end episode, how you kind of second-guessed yourself. But
yes.
Yeah, for those that don't know, year before last, Keith famously railed on Dress to Kill, was it?
Oh, yes.
Garbage. Yeah, still stand by that garbage statement?
I will stand by a movie that wildly does not work for me. I will not call it garbage anymore.
You're not going to throw it out. I guess you still have your copy on your shelf, I'm
well,
sure.
Well, it's right there on the shelf, so I shouldn't be keeping garbage in the house, so it isn't.
There you go. Not garbage. You heard it here first, folks. So, and then the next April 18th release is Buena Vista Social Club, which is Wim Wenders, and a documentary from Wim Wenders about a Cuban musical group. And I'm pretty sure I saw this when it came out. I actually don't remember it that well, but I just remember it being around and talking about it, but it didn't stick with me too well. So I guess
I know that I saw it, and it doesn't stick with me very well.
It's not garbage, is it?
But no, it's not. But I do remember that, you know, in the indie world, in the documentary world, this was a huge movie when it came out. I mean, there was a lot of talk about this, and Ry Cooter had a bit of a career resurgence, and you know, there was the touring band, there were the touring show about with these musicians. I'm really looking forward to watching it again, knowing more about Wim Wenders like I do these days, to kind of, you know, watch it through that prism and hopefully get more out of it. I mean, the music is fantastic. It's not anything near my favorite style, but I do remember seeing it. I just don't remember much about it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm pretty sure I did see it. So again, kind of like you, even though I tend to gravitate more toward his fiction work. He hasn't done a whole lot of documentaries. I know he's did the one recently about photography, which the name escapes me, but that was okay. But I think his style lends itself better to narrative films personally. So
I do too.
I could be wrong. I when I see this, I might rave about it. I think also the Cuban element too. And I was, as we talked about last time, I was just in Key West and Miami. So you're kind of thrown into Cuban culture there. So I'm interested in Cuban culture. You know, I did the tourist Versailles dinner, so I think, and given the, I guess the borders are a little more open. You know, we'll see how that lasts, but I think it's an interesting culture to look at and to see where it goes from here, if
very
anywhere.
True.
So, and then on the 25th of April, we have two more releases. We have Rumblefish and Tampopo. And I'll start with Rumblefish. I actually own the Masters of Cinema, and I'm kind of in the same boat with this one as I am the Buena Vista Social Club. Just rewind a few years. I saw this when I was a kid, but not, you know, I think I just thought it was another Outsiders or one of those types of movies, and but it didn't stick with me like that one. And maybe that's a good sign. Maybe that means that it was too artistic for my teenage mind. So some people, this one seems a little divisive. Some people love it, some people hate it. I have the Masters of Cinema Steelbook, which I haven't watched yet, or haven't rewatched. So I'm, of course, anytime that happens, I am happy a film comes on Criterion, but, you know, it's one I already own, so it's not thrilled, but that's just my personal situation. Have you seen it?
Well, this is where it would probably help if we had just more than the two of us talking today, because it's a movie I've never seen. And I have to admit, when it came out in 82, 83, I mean, it was something with my teenage mindset that I would have just ultimately rejected out of hand. I was a junior or senior in high school when this and Outsiders came out. And I just remember everybody talking about The Outsiders and talking about Rumblefish. And, you know, I was watching things like Basket Case and Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D at that point, you know. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And having you know, read about it a bit, it seems to be something, like you say, much more up my alley today. So I'm looking forward to rectifying that wrong. But yeah, I have no experience with it.
You know, I do like that that through Criterion we can kind of look at these films with a new lens, and just like the vendors, you know, we've seen now, I don't know how many you've seen, but I've probably seen at least close to a dozen other vendors' films. Mm-hmm. So you get a better context, you have a lot more life experience. So and yeah, a movie that might not have resonated as a teenager might resonate more as an adult. Actually, I remember seeing Once Upon a Time in America when I was around the same time, and not getting that because I was probably not old enough.
Right.
I've seen it since, and I got it quite a bit better the second.
I get it. Yeah.
Not that I am an opium user, but
yeah, I was going to say, did that help?
Yeah, it's all my time in these opium dens brought back memories. It does look like a pretty stacked release. There's some new stuff from Coppola and some other figures from the production, even Roman, which of course is controversial, bit based on his Napoleon release. There's another documentary from a couple years ago about it's called Locations, Looking for Rusty James, and a whole bunch of other. It looks pretty stacked. So, and there's also a commentary. It doesn't say what year the commentary was recorded, and I'd have to look at the Masters of Cinema, but I have a feeling that one's probably one that's been on every release DVD on maybe Laserdisc. On Laserdisc?
I don't know. No.
No? Okay. So anyway, not too excited about it, but I'll give it a try and probably talk about it here.
Sure.
But the next one, people are going... If I were going to say there's a release of the month, I would say Tampopo is probably that. Would you agree?
I do agree. I have interesting take on this one, but from what I've read, I do agree that this is one that is beloved and well sought after for years and years, and it was a big happy surprise for a lot of people. And as I have said in many of my blog postings and podcast appearances and everything, you know, I did not come to foreign or indie film organically throughout my life. It's something that I had to kind of learn and grow to do. So I have to admit right here, until the noise started about this movie, I had never heard of it.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. So there's an embarrassing a little statement for me to make, but I am absolutely looking forward to it. But I know next to nothing about it. And being that that's the situation, I'm using that to its full advantage, and I can't wait to experience it with no preconceptions.
Yeah, I almost wish I was in your shoes. I saw it maybe about 5 years ago, and I watched it on, I think it was a DVD that was not the best print. I know this is a recurring theme.
I've seen
a terrible print, and that colored my my reaction to it. So I didn't love it, but I did think there were some charming, humorous elements. So I think the print will make a difference. I wasn't in love with it. I know some people in our groups are head over heels, and a lot
of
people
just
recently discovered it because of the touring. Janice toured this film, and I think they still are touring it. So, and in fact, Matthew, I think, has been very vocal about his appreciation for this film.
That's true.
Yeah, I think it's a good film, and I'm looking forward to the revisit. I do remember it made me hungry. It's a foodie film with a lot of ramen noodles. I'll be eating a lot of ramen noodles the week of April 25th. So, yeah, I'd say it's a good month. Having the two Demis kind of, you know, I wouldn't say makes it disappointing because it's fewer releases than I'm used to, and some of the others aren't, you know, especially personally, just because I have Rumblefish, not too as ecstatic about it, but it's fine. No. What do you think about the month?
Well, I'd have to agree. You know, it's one of those months where you wait and wait and wait and refresh for and wait for that announcement, and when it comes out, you read it and you go,
You know, maybe we're a little spoiled by.
We absolutely are.
2016 was amazing, and like month after month, there were huge tentpole pictures that, And yeah, Tampopo is a big release. Probably Rumblefish is a pretty big one. And the Demi films are, you know, they're probably going to sell more than all of the rest, maybe combined.
Which is fine.
So it'll lighter on the wallet, and it'll keep us going until May, which hopefully will be a bigger month. We're getting towards the box set month, so as we get closer to the Barnes & Noble sale, which hopefully will happen, probably May or June, and definitely July. I think you can almost count on July being a big month.
Yes. Yes, they do to try to take advantage of the added traffic from Barnes & Noble.
Yep, so hopefully soon. Some box sets I would love, hopefully in the awnings.
It's time.
Yeah, it is. Well, I shouldn't complain too much. We have Before Sunset coming, so that's a pretty big one coming next month. All right, well, let's get into the releases from this week. And it's been 2 weeks since our last show, so really there have been three, because one came out just this past week. That was Black Girl. And we're going to skip that one and cover that on the next show, since there won't be anything coming out in between. But Something Wild and Fox and His Friends came out last week. So, Something Wild, did you get to see that?
I did. I watched it Friday night, and that was an amazing experience. Talk about a movie that I, you know, just had no real expectations going into it. Just to sit there and watch this story from 1961 go absolutely nowhere that I expected it to go. I have to admit that throughout the whole movie, I wasn't even sure if I liked it. And, you know, I admired it, and I loved the Saul Bass stuff, and I loved the Aaron Copland music, and I loved the, the street scenes and how vibrant and real those, you know, walking through New York seemed and probably was. But when we got into Ralph Meeker's place and the story just kind of locked down into that room, it, as I said, I just, as I was watching it, I was like, I don't know if I like this. Now talking here Sunday morning, I know that I did. But that was not a movie that immediately gave up its charms to me. I mean, what do you think about that?
Interesting. Yeah, I kind of had the same take. I was a little led down. My expectations were a little higher because Trevor had seen it ahead of time, and I think on his episode he'd mentioned that he didn't want to. He was careful not to spoil it, and I'll do the same. I agree that there are some things that that could impact your appreciation. It's some difficult things, actually. And for 1961, today some of those things might be more movie of the weekish, a little over dramatic, and maybe a little cliche. But I thought they kind of worked for 1961. But I did like the first 20 minutes or so, which was almost a silent movie.
Yes,
and I thought he did a really good job telling a story with a camera. And I was pretty much drawn in, but yeah, when the Ralph Meeker came subplot, we can say that the movie's basically divided in halves. I was the same way. I appreciated it. I think more because of the indie signature of it. This is right around the time of Shadows, just a little after it. But there really weren't a lot of Hollywood indie films coming out at the time, so. I don't know how many people saw it, whether it was groundbreaking. I'm sure Cassavetes saw it, and that might have influenced him.
Sure.
But yeah, I didn't love it. I liked it. I think it's worth seeing. I think it's worth picking up, but I don't think it'll be on many year-end lists.
I agree. And you know, with Kim Morgan giving Jack Garfine the opportunity to kind of resell it, I agreed with a lot of what he said. It still just didn't quite move me as much as I wanted it to. It seemed a bit cold. You know, the method acting and everything can be done very, very well, but when it's just two people in a room, it can start to feel pretty stagey. I think in the special features, I think this was a very good anecdote where Otto Preminger told Jack Garfine, he said, you know, this movie probably would have done a lot more business if it was in a foreign language with English subtitles. And
That was great.
Yeah, and I think there's some truth to that, because when we're reading a lot of these films, reading it internally in your head, they can come across less stagey and less strident than they might be in our original language. And I think this one kind of bears that out a bit.
Yeah, and not to take too much of an aside, but when we watch an Italian film from that same period, which is dubbed, mm-hmm. and we read the subtitles, it's not as jarring. However, right. if I watch an American film that has some ADR, actually, my wife joked at me. There's one movie, I'm not going to say which, that's an Oscar contender, actually nominated for an Oscar this year, that I pointed out that the ADR is really bad, and she said, "Oh, only you would notice that," but it did take me out of the film. I think even Bergman, Fellini, we see those subtitles. I think you're right that we do kind of the acting gets a little more forgiving about it.
And I
agree. I did like that Kim Morgan interview. I thought that was a good way of her personalizing it, and him, like you said, reselling it. So mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. It's one that could stick with me for a while. I don't know that I want to rewatch it.
It's definitely sticking with me. I mean, it's only been 2 days, I know, but I know that I'll think about this one for quite a while. But yeah, I don't feel any real need to rewatch it. And the Kim Morgan interview fits right in with, what I've been saying on the year-end episode about what I really like about Criterion lately, and that's the actual conversations instead mm-hmm. of talking head interviews. And I really think that helps bring out some more flavor of what these people are trying to say.
Agreed. And I saw it a couple weeks ago. I saw it the day I got it, I put it in. So it's I've had a little bit of time to reflect on it, but I haven't reflected on it a whole lot. I haven't been as haunted as you have been. So the other film, I think, resonated with me more, and that's Fox and His Friends. Did you get a chance to watch this or no?
Nope. So you're going monologue on this one.
Well, I will be brief, because I and you're welcome to interrupt me a little bit, but I am a Fassbender fan. I would say a pretty major fan. In fact, I'm going to do another podcast, I think next month, on his library. So I'm looking forward to that. This one is, Fassbender is a very kind of interesting figure, so prolific. I can't think of really hardly any film directors that have matched up with his output over, the good 15, 20 years.
He's the Stephen King of filmmaking.
Yeah, he is. And I think sometimes because he's so prolific and it's just amazing that he got such great results from all this different work, because it is relatively consistently good. Mm-hmm. There are his big pictures like the BRD trilogy, Ali, I'd say Petra von Kant, World on a Wire, mm-hmm. those stand out. And I'd say this one is maybe kind of a B+, but... Because he works so much, he puts a lot of himself in the story. You see a lot of the same themes, and so this one is surprisingly, I guess the label now is queer cinema, and it's for the 70s and even for Germany, which is probably more progressive in the 70s about those sort of things than definitely more than here, maybe more than the rest of Europe. It's very the queer aspect is in the forefront. He makes no secret that this is about...
This is not subtext, huh?
Right. He's commenting on gay culture. And right. And actually, he makes it seem more normal than it probably was at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that was just his way of putting it in the forefront. Whereas, for example, Petra von Kant, he had kind of used female... Oftentimes, he would use the people, his females from his stables as a way, I think, of conveying his own emotions.
I agree with that.
And this was actually a rewatch for me. I'd seen it before, and it stuck with me more. I think it's actually one of his better features. Quite a character story. I won't say a whole lot because, like you mentioned, I'm monologuing. But he tends to like to shock us, and so there is a lot of nudity in the picture, but it's of the male nudity variety. And and there's one shot where we're not used to seeing a certain piece of anatomy on screen, and it is absolutely a double standard. It's not fair. But there's one shot where it's framed, and Fassbender knew what he was doing when he framed a device, shot, reverse shot, one of those little dialogues, and there's a penis next to somebody's head in the shot, and this keeps on going for a couple minutes, and yeah, he's definitely trying to shake up the conventions of what we see as taboo and what's not. So
well, good for him.
Good for him. Yeah, yeah. I think it's very very good character study, and it's actually kind of like Petra von Kant, but a little more upbeat. And there's also a big class commentary, and I'd say not just in his homosexual circles, but also just culturally in general. So I think that's Fassbender's thing. So yeah, I think if I were going to recommend one from that week, that would be the one I would recommend. Very, very important movie. Well, maybe not important, but very, very good movie. So hope you get to see it soon, Keith.
Well, all right. It's up. It's going up the list. Thank you.
Are you a Fassbender fan?
I am. I am. Yeah. I have not seen a lot yet. It's one of those directors. I've been kind of famous in my own mind for doing fests. I think it was 2013. Right. I did an Ozu Fest. 2014, we did a Kurosawa Fest, a Bergman Fest, where we just watch everything that we can. And now with Filmstruck, I mean, there's even more available. So I'll call it a Fassbender. That's what I'm going to go on one of these days. So I'm definitely going to go right back to the beginning and watch them all the way through. I've probably seen 6 or 7, but I'd like to see them just in the context of his whole oeuvre.
You know, that might not work for you. I think...
Well, I don't when I say that, I don't watch them all right in a row. I mean, it takes like a year to do it when I do that.
Okay, well, he does have... I think his total output was 44 films, so that's...
I think so.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah.
And they're pretty heavy, so yeah, I think if you space them out over a year, that might be the way to approach it. But yeah, people do not binge. I've probably seen... I think I counted. I think I've seen about a dozen, which is... Uh-huh. That's a pretty good portion of his work. He did a lot of smaller features too. He did some TV as well. So yeah, definitely worth discovery. And I'd say I'm glad they put this one out. I like this one better than like Merchant of Four Seasons. So, and then the next Criterion film that's coming out is one I'm excited for is Camera Person, which comes out on the 7th of February. And I was a little disappointed this one did not get an Oscar nomination. Because I thought, and you're more of a historian, but if it had been, it might have been one of the rare Criterion titles to be nominated for an Oscar, you know, and come out before the ceremony. So I was trying to think if there are any others. There are probably some foreign films.
That's going to be a category I can't pull out of my head, right off the top of my head. But there typically isn't a lot of synergy. Or amongst Criterion and at least Oscars, I know there's a lot of other award ceremonies where that might fit better.
Yeah, sometimes there's foreign film category. Yeah, I think it's usually foreign film or documentary. I think most of the Best Picture candidates, if Criterion got them, it would be after their sell-by date.
Right, right.
Yeah, I thought maybe 2 days, one night, but I couldn't remember, and I didn't research. Of course, it's moot because it didn't get nominated.
Yeah, there you go.
And I haven't seen it yet, but it's one of the, as far as newer films go, it's one of the top expectations and high hopes for. So really looking forward to this one, and I'll hopefully see it within the next couple weeks. And we'll definitely talk about that not on the next show, but the one after that.
It's definitely one of those that I know that is coming right from the mailbox directly into the player when it gets here.
Same.
I only know what I've read, and I know, you know, Kirsten Johnson's history. And is it Kirsten or Kristen? I forget.
Good question. I think it's Kirsten. I think it's Kristen.
Okay. Well, anyway, you know, it just has such a good story, such a good buzz around it. And
It's Kirsten.
Kirsten? Okay. Well, that's where I started, so good. So I'm going to watch this with great glee, and I hope it lives up to it.
Great glee, yes. You know, I'm glad it's just us two, because we're already at 45 minutes.
Oh, boy.
I did not lie that there's a lot to talk about. So, speaking of great glee, do you want to get into your short take?
Sure. So, with being sick, I've watched a fair amount of stuff lately. But the one I want to talk about is a laserdisc spine, number 7. And at the age of 51 and at least 40, 45 years of watching films, I finally saw High Noon. And
wow, just now.
Just now. And the reason that I watched this is because of what I've said on other podcasts and what I've tweeted. Just on general ill-advised principle, I have been an anti-Western person my whole life. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just a lot of bad Saturday afternoon movies when there was nothing else to watch. But I do have to commend Criterion, and obviously they're putting out what they consider the cream of the crop. But I have really changed my mind on a lot of Westerns, of course, with My Darling Clementine and Stagecoach. And One-Eyed Jacks as my number 2 release of last year. I mean, obviously I'm fighting against my own stereotypes, but these movies sure seem to push back against that in my own head. And High Noon has now joined that pantheon of Westerns that I really, really enjoy. And probably kind of funny to say that about High Noon, because it's such a cultural stereotype of, you know, great movies and all that. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason that I sort of rejected it over the years. It's like, you know, I've seen this story in my mind. I've seen this story. I've seen the standoff in the street. I don't care if they did it first or best. I don't need to see it again.
Sure.
And boy, was I messed up, because that's probably one of the main reasons why I love this so much. When it got to the end of the film, there is no 30 paces standoff in the street. I'm like, what the hell was I thinking all this time? You know, and you know, the fact that this is definitely talk about subtext not being very sub. I mean, you know, this being, you know, kind of a diatribe against the McCarthyism and all of that, and how much Howard Hawks and John Wayne hated this movie and made Rio Bravo, you know, 8 years later in response to this. And again, Rio Bravo not being one that I haven't seen, and, you know, but just knowing the gung-ho John Wayne stereotype that goes along with that. And, you know, just to watch Gary Cooper, you know, Gary Cooper in my head has always been this character, even though I've never seen it up until now, you know, and to watch a few of the other films that I've seen with him in it, like Design for Living and in the collection and Love in the Afternoon and a few others, I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense in my mind of what Gary Cooper is. And now that I've seen the movie, even what I thought Gary Cooper was in this movie isn't. So, you know, really what I'm bringing to this is generic dislikes, stereotype, just complete assumption in my head that was so wrong that, you know, not only did I love this movie, but I just felt like this, I should have just slapped myself in the face with one of these big 12-inch discs that I watched it on. So,
he said discs, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. That's, oh boy, good thing I've got my enunciation going.
Yes.
Not back to Fox and his friends. So anyway, I'm traveling all over the place, but just by way of saying that thank you to Criterion, even from 1986 or whenever this came out on Laserdisc, thank you for showing me the error of my ways one more time.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that there's also a Olive Signature release that came out relatively recently, and I think that's a series that they're trying to compete with. Criterion, maybe a little imitation there. I have seen this one. What's interesting is I've only seen this in film classes. This film is used to show, I guess you'd say, temporal progression, because time is just omnipresent throughout the film. There's always that clock is always running, and you're always aware of it. So it's a good way to, when you're studying time in film. Actually, this and Run Lola Run are two that are used often. And so I think I've seen it either 2 or 3 times in film class. And sometimes film classes can take the joy out of films, because there's such a thing as too much analysis. And, you know, when you talk about a film for 2 or 3 class sessions, it does get pretty tired, like Psycho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Three Classes with Psycho. I love the film, but it did get a little too much. This one is it's fun to break down and to look at it, the different use of time as a framing device or a narrative device, and how it's always there. But it's a entertaining romp of a movie.
Very entertaining. You've given me not long, that's for sure. But you've given me a great idea. You know, speaking of Run Lola Run, we should redo High Noon with three different scenarios.
High Noon High.
Yeah, there you go.
Sliding doors. That would be interesting. I think that's a great choice. I like that you brought a Laserdisc pick. These short takes, it's easy to just go with a recent release. That's one that it's probably not coming back, but it is part of the collection. No. Yeah, worthwhile.
Well, you know that I'm the champion of them, and I do my Sunday night Laserdisc just so I make sure to watch these collector's items that I've purchased. And you're not watching the best picture, but it is a bit of a fun nostalgic romp to watch these movies in an inferior format. And I know that's me just kind of trying to make excuses for why I collect some of these, but they are fun to watch for sure.
You're being a purist. That's fine. You could have spent the $20 and seen the better transfer, but that's okay. You're the completionist.
But now I've got the commentary, and I've got the original story that it was based on that I can watch on the TV or read on the TV. It's just fun.
Mm-hmm. I haven't splurged for the olive yet, but I will. That's one I think it's worth having your catalog, your non-Criterion catalog. Mm-hmm. So my short take is a fun one. I'm doing Give Me Shelter, which yes. I'd seen before, but I saw it last night as part of a midnight movie, at our local theater. They had they're doing this thing called Sound Plus Vision. So what they did is they had this local band play a handful of songs before the show, and it one of them is a friend of ours. That's really what prompted us to go, although I think we might have gone anyway. But she's the singer. It's a female-led group, and they're kind of like, I'm not going to say a bar band, but they're kind of Americana rock and roll, maybe a little bit of Southern rock, but she has, I guess, big vocals, kind of a good stage presence, so I really like them. And they're called Debbie and the Skanks, which is a fun name. And Give Me Shelter played after that, and they actually finished their set by covering Give Me Shelter, and they did well. Even they'd only practiced it twice, and they still pulled it off. But it was fun. And then we watched the film, and I'd seen it before. I do like the Rolling Stones, but I'm not a big fan. So with music documentaries, I don't really rewatch them unless I am a big fan. Like I'll rewatch Don't Look Back, which of course we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it Don't Look Now? No, Don't Look Back. We did this last time.
Geez, here we go again.
I know. But I probably wouldn't have rewatched this otherwise, but it was a lot of fun to rewatch it with a crowd in a concert setting. And I kind of wondered if it would resonate the same way. It's by far a very well done documentary. One of the most notable, I think, musical documentaries of that time frame, and really covers the Altamont, really the train wreck that was the Altamont, but it also covers. You see the '60s culture, hippie culture, and even though I'd seen it on my TV and kind of chuckled to myself, it was a lot of fun to watch it with a crowd, with a good audio, the full surround sound, and to hear them react, especially seeing it before seeing some of the oddities, the people high on drugs, and the Summer of Love stuff, to see, to laugh with people about that and how that era was, and then the shock value of the Hell's Angels and the Altamont. I could tell a lot of people in the audience. It was a sold out show in a theater, which is always fun, but people, I don't think they knew about that situation, so there were a lot of gasps.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the movie does a good job of capturing that moment.
Yeah, it does.
So I won't talk about it, and people haven't seen it. Again, that's something that's worth going in blind about. But it was quite an experience. Of course, they didn't show all the supplements, but that's fine. I think I've seen them before anyway.
Sure.
But it was a great midnight movie. I they're going to do this more, but so far no other Janis releases. But I would love if they did Monterey Pop or actually Don't Look Back would be a fun one to do. Actually, even though it's not Criterion, I love if they did Pink Floyd Live in Pompeii would be wonderful. So,
yeah.
Are you a fan of Give Me Shelter?
I am. I'm like you. I mean, I grew up with the Rolling Stones, and they were just always just kind of there. Not a huge fan, but certainly would miss them if they were just not if the music was not around anymore. Mm-hmm. But the film, and you know, everything that you just said, I mean, the film really does capture that moment very, very well. And it would have been interesting to be there to see all these people gasp at that. Because mm-hmm. for me, I mean, that's what the movie, that's the central core of the movie. But just to go in as a Rolling Stones appreciator, that would have been interesting to see.
Yeah, and what's interesting is we have Woodstock and Monterey Pop, which are kind of the A festivals. This is kind of the A side festivals. This is kind mm-hmm. of the B side, the blackened mm-hmm. one that doesn't get talked about as much. But I'm glad it was captured, and I'm glad I got to see it again with the crowd. All right, Filmstruck. Boy, it's a good thing Doug's not here. No offense, Doug, but this would be you're getting sick. Probably kept this from being a 2.5 hour episode.
There you go.
All right, so again, we haven't had an episode for a couple weeks, and the Filmstruck library rotates pretty frequently. A lot of new content that they're adding. I'm actually really, really digging this. By the way, Doug didn't have Filmstruck, so maybe he would not have prolonged the show.
Well, there you go.
So I'll just kind of breeze through some of these, and there are more than I could mention. They've had a bunch of different collections that have hit both channels in the last couple weeks. There was one that just came out a few days ago, which was starring Toni Collette, who is a weird addition.
It is.
And it had Velvet Goldmine Cosi and Muriel's Wedding. But I noted it because Velvet Goldmine was on there. And this was on the main feed. And I didn't check to see if they had a Criterion intro. You didn't check, did you?
I didn't, no.
And I can't check now because we're podcasting. But that would not go well. It's been a title that's been rumored, and I would like to see it. It's Todd Haynes, of course, from the mid-90s. And I thought it was interesting that it showed up. Hopefully, even though I'm not huge on it, I think it's the way it kind of masked the real characters was and tried to imitate them. It didn't work as well for me, but I would like it in the collection. So
yeah, me too.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. But just another one of those that I would love the excuse to put at the top of the list.
Yep. I would love more Todd Haynes in the collection.
Yes.
There was also an Agnes Varda collection with 15 films. And did you watch all 15 films this week?
Twice, actually. I wanted to make sure that we could really talk about them.
And Vagabond 15 times.
Yeah.
I'm a big Varda fan. I haven't seen, I've probably seen five, maybe, I think, of this batch. So more Varda, the better, but I'm not going to watch 15 films in a week. Hopefully they stay there. And again, they're probably all on the Criterion channel already. These are more just things rotating into the main channel.
Sure, sure.
And there are a few others. There was Hideo Takamine, that came out right before our last episode, and we didn't get to check it out. There was also Mark Herman. So yeah, they do have some collections with a little more obscure actors and directors. You've had the service the whole time, right?
I have, Keith? Yeah.
So have you dug into many of these much?
I have. I have to admit I've been watching mostly shorts. I didn't prepare to think about them. But yeah, I look at this every day, and I'm actually very impressed with how often Filmstruck, the main line, you know, rotates their themes through. Mm-hmm. You know, Criterion's been a little less active in that way, but definitely as some of these things start to pop up, I really feel like they're in the process of developing a lot of things that are more than just, you know, theming movies together. It's a lot of mm-hmm. original productions and everything.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is kind of changing the subject a little bit, but I was looking at it right now, and I noticed that on the Filmstruck page, there is a cinema passport to Iran.
I did see that.
I would caution anybody that goes in there to make sure you can get back after you watch them.
Yeah, that's the elephant in the room. It's been an interesting weekend. And actually, I'm going to get to something in a bit that will call this out a little bit. But Criterion does like to tweak the political situation. And in fact, when Women of the Year was teased in the newsletter clue, a lot of people thought that was a vote, quote, for Hillary, or an endorsement for Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably Criterion would have was in the Hillary camp. I can't see them being Trump fans.
As a group, but, yes, I'm sure.
But yeah, I think they were, and I'll just go ahead and get to it. In the Criterion channel, over on an inaugural weekend, they do these double features. So they did one for Inauguration Day on Secret Honor, which was the one-act, or kind of a one-act play, mm-hmm. The Robert Altman. And then they did In the Loop, which is very much a sarcastic and actually kind of oddly prescient movie about a government. That's British government. But mm-hmm. And then it kind of, that same tone was translated into the Veep TV show. And I'm a big fan of that TV show.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But it's not a, it's pretty prescient too. It's almost like that and House of Cards has come to reality. So if there are any Trump listeners, you know, we don't want to get too animated against that, but I think it's clear where we stand and where Criterion stands. So,
well, if you are on the Trump side, he is the president, and you have to be able to take a little bit of dissent in opinion. So that's just the way it's gonna. That's the way it's gonna be, and I love the way that you know, you see the subtle digs. Even mm-hmm. TCM on Inauguration Day played Face in the Crowd, although they claim it was for. Patricia O'Neill's birthday, or Patricia mm-hmm. Neal's birthday. So,
yeah, I think there was another. I forget, but I think there was another movie too that was also a little close, too close for comfort. So, yeah, I think, and there's been a lot of backlash against celebrities through this process. So, I think the TCM and Criterion are representing the anti Trump contingent pretty clearly, even if not overtly.
True.
So
true.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, that's Cinema Passport. That's not a new collection, but them putting that on the top of the page is no coincidence. They know what they're doing.
I would think so.
So, yeah, let me get into the Criterion channel a little bit. Speaking of the original programming, I'm like you. I've been looking at this every day, and especially with the show, I've been seeing what little collections they come up with that we'll talk about. And I've really enjoyed seeing what pops up. So this week we had Adventures in Movie Going with Roger Corman.
Loved it.
Me too. And speaking of Western, bad Westerns, he's made a couple.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, he's self-aware. You know, he knows that he's made some crappy movies. I think he would not argue that point. But he's also been influential towards so many people in the collection, so many different filmmakers. So I really, really enjoyed this interview, even though he's getting up there. Some good 20, 25 minutes, was it?
Yeah, about 20, 25. Mm-hmm.
You saw it?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it all the way through. I kind of noticed that, he is really getting up there in age, and his answers seemed very deliberate and almost mm-hmm. somewhat canned sometimes, but still very good information. And I love the fact that they took the angle of, you know, not only has he created all this wonderful, I'll say it again, garbage. He's created wonderful garbage over the years.
Wonderful garbage.
Yes, yeah. Many of which I really enjoyed in my younger years. But it's really great that they kind of, you know, took the angle of he was and is also a distributor. And mm-hmm. you know, in some ways, he did some work like Janice in bringing some of our, you know, films to America. Cries and Whispers being a very good example.
That was very interesting. I didn't know that he had a part in that. So yeah. I was really taken aback by that. It's odd that probably the best of Corman would not be, well, I don't want to say would not be worthy of Criterion, but because the best of his stuff is decent, but it's not to the level of like One Eye Jax. I'd say One Eye Jax is a mainstream feature that had art house sensibilities, even mm-hmm. if it didn't. People didn't know it, and it didn't come up at the time. I really enjoyed this. This is, I believe, the second iteration of this series. The first one was with Bill Hader.
Yes.
Did I miss one?
I think that's it. Yeah, just the two so far. I'm getting it confused with the other series that's up to number three, which is the Observations on Film Art. So
That's the David Bordwell and is it Kristen Thompson?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I love those too. And this was just a small, and these have all been small little nuggets. And having gone to film classes, the information they convey is pretty brief. You can tell they're reading from prepared remarks mm-hmm. and going over some simple themes. This is not, Koganata gets a lot of hate for his visual essays. These are probably on that level. You know, they are insightful, but they're, some of them are a little obvious if you, I shouldn't really say that.
Well, we always have to remember that it's not just, they're not trying to just reach us,
Right.
There are people just starting their journeys. And if this was 15 years ago for me, I would really appreciate that stuff.
But even if it's obvious, I do still enjoy it. And especially if the visual essays, if they use shots to illustrate their points, which they did here with Taste of Cherry and Where's My Friend's House, mm-hmm. two films I do love. And I think two films do establish a very, very potent sense of place. And they use the landscapes well. So even though it was brief and she didn't say a whole lot, I thought it was interesting. And this was number three. I'd seen the first one. I think I missed the second one, so I don't remember what that was.
I'm sorry. I'm not remembering right now either.
And like I said, I'm not going to go on Filmstruck, so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me breeze through the other ones I have here. And again, we can't cover them all. But I do like covering the double features or the short plus features. So Incident by a Bank and Big Deal on Madonna Street was one short and feature, and I've actually seen neither of these, and I didn't get a chance to watch them. And then the other was A Day with the Boys and George Washington. I've seen George Washington. I didn't get a chance to see A Day with the Boys. So yeah. Have you seen either of these?
That's actually, Day with the Boys is actually a supplement on the George Washington disc. So I did watch it at the time. I don't really remember it, other than thinking, "Oh, Clue Gulager. That's interesting that he did more than the horror movies that I remember him for." So, and Last Picture Show, of course. But I did want to mention that completely not even connected to this. I had last weekend was watching Big Deal on Madonna Street on Filmstruck and. About two-thirds of the way into the movie, Comcast lost all of our internet for the entire neighborhood. So,
oh, you're kidding.
So I actually had to, and I was watching it that way only out of convenience because I was already mm-hmm. had my ass on the couch. So I got up and dutifully put the disc in the player and finished up. So, again, another strong advertisement for our physical media. It's still very important.
Yeah, and I have the DVD, but I have not watched it, and did you notice the difference between the DVD transfer and Filmstruck transfer?
Well, I may be wishful thinking, but the DVD transfer, especially at the beginning, is god-awful. And this did seem reasonably better. I didn't do a side-by-side comparison, but it does seem better. And hopefully that I've always assumed that the film was in such bad shape that they didn't have anything else to work with. But I have hope now that it can get cleaned up because it is a fantastic little crowd pleaser. I love the movie and it was remade by Louis Malle and even had a remake with George Clooney in the early 2000s with Welcome to Collinwood. So that is a you know, it is a remake, but that is a very funny movie as well. Same story with a American Sensibility.
You heard it here first. Keith's mouth to your ears. It's getting upgraded.
There you go.
And if it doesn't happen, blame Keith.
Go out and buy nine copies each, and then it will.
So you just advocated for DVD, for physical media, but you probably talked me into watching it on Filmstruck, so thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
So there was another double feature. They do the Tuesday short plus features and then Friday double features. And I think this one was also a little bit of tweaking. This was Victim and The Night Porter. I've seen The Night Porter and pretty interesting. I haven't seen Victim, but The Night Porter is a way of processing post-fascism,
yes,
let's say.
Very true, very true.
Have you seen Victim?
I have. That is a Eclipse. That's in the Eclipse series, and I have seen it. And it's a very good film. Very good film. Again, a lot like Something Wild, that you're surprised at what you're watching. And I can't remember exactly what year it came out, but right around the same time, you're surprised at what you're watching.
61.
61, yeah.
Yeah, that was on the Basil Dearden's Underground. So, and that's a clip set I haven't cracked yet.
One of the few interesting titles that was on Criterion Laserdisc, but only made it to the Eclipse line on DVD.
That's why I'm glad we have you.
Yes.
Little nuggets like that, baby. I would have never known. So, thank you, Keith. They also do a spine release, and we've talked in previous episodes about this new concept of the spine. They have a digital spine, so to speak, and based on their Friday night double features, I'd say they have a they do have a spine for sure. But this was Itu Mama Tambien, so some people that cover haters might be glad they don't have to hold that monstrosity in their hands and watch it. But I'm not as big of a hater on that cover.
I'm not either. Even as the completionist, okay. I have to tell people, remember what we're here for, and that is the film first.
But yeah, that's just for your info. If you want to catch the full release, it's out there, and we'll just highlight those as they come out. But I've seen it, and I think it's a phenomenal movie. I think it's well worth your time, mm-hmm. and I've seen all the features. I don't recall there being that many, but it was good. And we also had a closet video this week. We had Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight, and gosh, that his debut film is escaping me.
Oh boy, we're professionals here, aren't we?
We are, yes. So there's some rumors that maybe that feature would come to Criterion. I do get a kick out of these videos pretty much always, but they sometimes it's more about the films that influence, well, it's always about the films that influence these filmmakers. Mm-hmm. But I like how the greed factor comes into play, and it really did here, because he was feeling guilty the more he grabbed, and his last two were the Demi and Tati sets.
Yeah, there you go.
One more
in the big fat set, you know.
So yeah, that was fun. Have you seen Moonlight yet?
I haven't. I haven't seen many new films at all in the last year, so I'm completely uninvested in the Oscar race this year.
Yeah, me too, mostly. Although I try to see some, but yeah, the thing is, I think new films are not as good as old films, so it's sometimes setting yourself up for disappointment.
I really try to not fall into that trap, but it just feels more and more true all the time.
I know, and me too. With you. Yeah. His first film was Medicine for Melancholy,
there
so you
go.
Were on the right track. I've mm-hmm. heard great things about Moonlight, and it seems to be kind of this year's Carol, that everybody I respect loves it. So it's probably going to be up my alley, but you know, don't want to judge a film until I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I hate it, I think sounds like he's an interesting filmmaker, and I would welcome him, a new voice into the collection.
Yeah, that kind of fits into the category that Criterion does sometimes about the, I don't know, what would you call it, or I had a thought that it would be called something like the calling card into the collection. You know, it's maybe not your most important film, like Christopher Nolan. You know, with Following in the collection. By mm-hmm. itself, probably not arguable, of course, but maybe not Criterion-worthy just as a film, but as a calling card of a director, you know, it tells a very interesting story of where they came from. And I think that's kind of what they do with some of those films.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of making that that statement. Yeah, Christopher Nolan's a great example. He's definitely a prominent movie film director, but we're not going to get Inception or Dark Knight in the collection. No. So I think following's fine.
Yeah, sure.
It's a lot of times when they do these videos, they're there for another reason. So it's possible he's on a supplement, and just based on what I've seen, I think I would appreciate his take on some classic movies or indie movies.
I agree with that. It was fun to watch and listen to him.
Yeah. So all right. Well, I did enjoy your year end special that I missed, and probably a good thing I missed. Speaking of Doug missing this one and inflating the running time, because I had been on there, it would have been 4 hours. I actually backed out of that one because I was like, I think it's a little crowded, and I had one of these to do, so I thought I'd let you guys have at it, and boy, you did you ever. So I did enjoy that, but the Criterion Forum also did their best of the year. And since that just came out, and this is Criterion Now, I thought it's worth looking at a little bit to see what their forum. I know you're not the biggest Criterion Forum fan, and that's fine, but they do have an interesting take, and it's pretty much consistent. I'll just read their favorites in order.
Yeah,
A Brighter Summer Day was their favorite, and then Decalogue, Dreams, The Road Trilogy, Chimes at Midnight, The Kennedy Films, The Emigrants, The New Land, and then The New World, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, and La Chienne. So that, I think that's up your pretty close to what you guys came up with.
Nothing wrong with that list.
Yeah, it's a good list. Good year. Best box set was Decalogue, and best commentary was A Brighter Summer Day. I'm absolutely on board with that. Tony Raine's commentary, it was amazing.
I listened to that last weekend. I was awestruck.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Best reissue was Night and Fog, which I haven't had a chance to get back into, but I need to get back into that one. I've seen the original. It's short film, but I think the extras are what stands out there. Speaking of extras, their favorite extra, I think I'm on board with too, was the Blood Simple, Shooting Blood Simple, that little telestrator thing what they did with the Coens. Have you seen that?
Oh, fantastic. I watched that with great glee, as I'm known to now say.
Yeah. And best cover was A Brighter Summer Day, which was, I think you guys seem to agree on that on your episode. Worst cover was Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which
I'm not on board with that. I found that cover pretty amazing. So,
yeah, it was busy, but I would say that Squid and the Whale might be up there for my best worst cover. I haven't looked at all of them to really make that call, but again, I've said this before. I'm not a cover hater. Best packaging was Strangelove, which I think you guys were on board with that, although there was a lot of good packaging this past year. And most unnecessary release was Ingrid Bergman in her own words. You want on board with that?
I am. Everybody has heard my take on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great information, but having a spine on it still makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's not garbage, but it could have been. You pick a Bergman movie, throw it on that disc. I'm with you.
Yep.
That's pretty much it. One thing they said most flawed release was The Exterminating Angel, which was just basically a upgrade. I didn't have a problem with it, but
That's flawed with how they presented it, but the actual disc, you know, there's no flaw in that, I don't think.
Yeah, maybe the flaw is that they didn't do something special for that film, which I think we'd agree is pretty high caliber film.
Sure.
So yeah, it's fun when they do those. I always enjoy seeing their little debates. There's a little snark.
Oh yeah.
There's always a lot of snark actually, which I kind of clipped or snipped, but and you're welcome to go read it yourself. All right, well, we're close to the end here. Just want to wrap up with a few news pieces since we don't have a way to cover those elsewhere. So there were some new Phantom pages, and I'm just going to read these off. Donna Deitch, Michael Radford, Ron Shelton, Joan Micklin Silver, Uzan Palsy, John Sturges, Ridley Scott, Norman Jewison, Brian Singer, and Jerome Robbins. So a few big names in that group. I think the ones that stand out really are, well, I think this confirms West Side Story is probably coming.
It does, I think. Yeah, I think we're going to see The Great Escape with John Sturges.
Yeah.
The Ridley Scott kind of, Ridley Scott and Norman Jewison seems like you go a few directions with those, so I'm not, I mean, there are a few guesses out there. What do you think?
Well, Ridley Scott, I think, could be The Duelist. I've seen that,
true.
And that seems more like a Criterion type of film, and I believe, speaking of Criterion form, I think they ferreted out that it was out of print, so that's a sign. The Norman Jewison, yeah, not sure.
Moonstruck, Rollerball, In the Heat of the Night, just go on and on. I mean, there are, I don't know that any of them really reached that level for me, but there's, if the name is out there, there are a few it could be. Ron Shelton, I can't believe it'd be anything but Bull Durham. I love Bull Durham. I think a Criterion edition would be the only way I would watch it again, because I've seen it many, many times. I would like to see what they bring to it. And a couple of those other names, Donna Deitch, I don't even know that name, so...
Yeah, I just read them off. Some of the speculation was for, Desert Hearts for her.
Oh, right, right.
And Jewison was, I think they, some people speculated the Thomas Crown Affair. And then I guess there, one connection with these is some have MGM ties. So, and it, one person said Jerome Robinson plus Norman Jewison plus MGM equals Fiddler on the Roof, which could be interesting. I could see that.
Sure. Bryan Singer, I mean, could it, there's nothing else other than Usual Suspects, and I'm pretty unimpressed by that to potentially join the collection. I mean, it's a good touchstone from the mid-90s, but not something I'm itching to revisit at all.
You don't think it's an X-Men movie? No? Yeah, I think it could be Usual. I think it probably is Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
That one hasn't aged as well for me. It's basically one of those, all right, you've seen it once, you got the twist, or you've seen it twice, and there's the twist, and then it's kind of like the Sixth Sense, its shelf life is twice.
That's right. You watch it once for the twist, and the second time to watch how they get to the twist, that's it.
Yep. So I think it's a good movie.
It's fine.
Yeah, sure. We're okay with it.
Yeah.
I'm a little more excited for Janus Films is touring Taipei Story, which is another Edward Yang, which I haven't seen.
I have not either.
In fact, I've only seen the two Edward Yangs in the collection, but it sounds like there's an opportunity for a lot more, not just Edward Yang, but for Taiwan film in general. There's some Hu Hsiao Shen, mm-hmm. Flight of the Red Balloon is on Filmstruck, and some others have been rumored. So yeah, I'm excited. When I watched the A Brighter Summer Day and in the supplements when they talked about Taiwanese film, this one was one that jumped out at me as one I really wanted to see, very high on the wish list.
Same here.
So hopefully we get it. I think we're getting it. Just
I would say
win.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And then another thing we're not going to get, and actually it's too bad Doug's not here for this, but Blue is the Warmest Color. Somehow at some point they removed that special edition coming soon from the website. So I didn't really buy that they were going to reissue. They've never done that before, and maybe it was an idea they had at one point, but yeah, so much time has passed, I can't see them doing that.
It felt like they did this. They jumped on the bare bones to kind of jump mm-hmm. into a window, and, that window was slammed shut, and, most people know that the two stars and the director are, I don't think you'd ever want to get them, they couldn't get them in the same room again, so... It would be interesting to see what they could do with this, but I think that ship sailed.
Yeah, and speaking of Oscar and Criterion ties in, this might be one, I'd have to look at the release
True.
Dates, but this could be something like that, where they're trying to capitalize on the Oscar campaign and the Cannes aftermath. But Yeah, the reason I mentioned I wish Doug was here, or maybe it's a good thing he isn't, but he did a really good episode of the Plane Archive, the Plane Cast, with Erica from Magic Lantern, which I really enjoyed, and I really enjoyed Erica's take. And they did get into some of those controversies, and yeah, they existed, but I think at least one of the actresses was proud of the film, so... Even though it was not an easy path to get to it, so.
Right.
But I'm okay. I think bare bones is fine. I don't see us getting.
It might be one of those releases that reflection is much better after a decade or so.
Yeah. So maybe in a decade they'll come together.
There you go.
All right. Well, we've covered a lot of ground. Yeah. Again, I'm glad it's just the two of us. So. Let's kind of start to wind this baby down. We like to talk about what we've been doing lately. So, Keith, what have you been doing lately?
I've been traveling for work. I've been sick, and I've been watching movies. Next? No. you know, we talked at the beginning. I'm about to put up Criterion Completion Podcast Hour 7 with yours truly and you truly.
Yeah.
I do want to mention... Yes. I do want to mention, although it's been about a month, I was... very proud and very pleased to be part of the Eclipse Viewers three-part series on Louis Malle's documentaries. If you haven't heard that, please go out and check it out. And more than anything, if you haven't seen those documentaries, please check them out. They are on Filmstruck. And
agreed.
You know, that's you're still paying $10 a month, but it's effectively free, and listening to our podcast is free too, so why not? You know, spend a dollar on a soda and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, although I hear that Louis Malle's voice is garbage from somebody.
His voice is not garbage. It was the redundant points he was making.
Oh, that was it. I didn't listen. You caught me.
Yes.
But I love those documentaries. But,
yeah, they're very good. Very good. But they were not garbage at all.
They were not. So, yeah, and I've been doing some of the same. I actually had a bunch of dental work, so I was watching movies as well. A lot of movies, but I'm always watching movies.
Of course.
Anybody that listens to this show knows that. We did record a Paul Thomas Anderson Criterion Close-Up, which we are going to put out next week. So that we enjoyed that. I hopefully others will enjoy it. I also started a new project where, and I did this for last year, towards the end of the year, but I'm trying to watch all the 2017 movies as they come out and rank them. And, it's just a list. I love lists, but I realize they're subjective.
All movies or Criterion movies?
Criterion movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No,
wow.
All movies would be a lot. I would have to quit everything.
I think so.
So far, I think I have a dozen or two on there, not maybe a dozen and a half. Of movies I've seen, and I'll keep updating them as they come out, and by the end of the year, it'll be pretty comprehensive. So, and I was on your show.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were.
Hopefully I didn't stink it up.
You did not. You did not. And like I said, depending on what order people listen to these in, either I hope you enjoy it, or I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah. So we're going to have a good 2.5 hours of Aaron and Keith this week. So get buckling,
yep.
Folks. All right, so we have our final thing is the piece of flair. So, Keith, what's your piece of flair?
My piece of flair is actually two pieces of flair. And my girlfriend Maggie had been wondering about us watching these two movies for a couple of years now. And not easy to find. And lo and behold, they showed up on Filmstruck. And about a week ago, we sat down over two nights and watched Jean de Florette and Manon of the Spring. And I have to say that, especially for, late 80s crowd-pleasing foreign films, these certainly fit the bill for me. I really enjoyed these films. It was another blind spot for me. I was very excited to see when I played them on Filmstruck, although it was on the main line, they came up with... MGM intros, so anything I think that of this caliber that comes up with an MGM intro is always fair game to become a Criterion release at some point. Another connection is that these were filmed, or this originally started as a film in the 50s with Marcel Pagnon, who should be joining the collection this year with the Fanny trilogy.
I think so.
That's a nice connection. And, you know, from what I understand, it was basically a four-hour movie that was basically Manon des Sources, or Manon of the Spring, did not do well. It was a four-hour movie that he was told to cut way down, and then he decided to make two books out of it. And when he wrote them, Jean de Florette kind of evolved as the prequel to the story that he had been telling in his prior film. Interesting, because I found Jean de Florette to be certainly the better of the two parts.
Agreed. Better, actually, I'd say.
Yeah, Manon of the Spring just kind of comes across as really unnecessary and basically kind of a by-the-numbers revenge fantasy more than anything. Mm-hmm. I never believed that truly that enough time had passed for Manon to have grown into this young nubile woman and all of that. But, Yves Montand was amazing. You know, it's always good when you can feel for such an asshole, you know, because he was in this movie, at least until the end. So
absolutely, and Depardieu, I think I'm not a huge fan of his, but I think he's good in Jean de Florette.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. Gerard Depardieu is kind of like John Hurt for me, somebody that I know and hear about, but have not seen many of his films. And he was very, very good in this. And I always like to talk about my assumptions of movies I've never seen. But the thing that's always been stuck in my head over the years was that Jean de Florette sounded like a woman to me. And I always got it confused with A Room with a View. So I'm glad that I finally separated that out.
Interesting. Yeah. There was a Shout Factory double feature of these that came out, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, maybe longer.
Okay.
And I own that, and it looks fantastic.
Okay, good.
I don't know that, I think it's probably too soon for it to come out on Criterion, but you never know. The films look fantastic, period. Even Manon, I agree that it's the inferior film, but it looks good. Also, there's a connection with Claude Berry. He directed The Two of Us with Michel Simon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Great movie, or good movie, I'd say.
Good movie.
So my piece of flair is Artificial Eyes releasing a, drumroll, Louis Malle box set. So there's about 10 movies. Well, there are 10 movies from Louis Malle, many of which are already on Criterion, some of which are not. But looks like there might be some transfers. Of course, Artificial Eye also did the Tarkovsky retrospective and released some of those in the UK. And those appear to be coming to Criterion. At least I think Stalker is pretty much a given, and maybe the others. So, the one Elevator to the Gallows, or Lift to the Gallows, however you want to name it, is one I'd like to see, as well as the Upgrades for the Lovers and The Fire Within. I think the rest of his work is pretty well represented on Blu-ray.
It is.
Yeah. So, and I know you're a huge fan, so.
I am.
I am too. All right, guys. Well, it's been a pleasure, Keith. Thank you for joining me.
And thank you.
Doing the duo cast for Criterion Now. You can find the show on Twitter at Criterion_now. You can also find us on Criterion Cast, Twitter, Facebook, blog, CriterionCast.com. You can find me, AWES505, on Twitter. And you can find me at CriterionCloseUp.com. Keith, where can people find you?
They can find me in downtown Minneapolis. They can find me on Twitter at Key Productions, KEE. You can find me on CriterionCompletion.com. And you can also find me and Aaron, herding cats sometimes, at the Criterion Completion Facebook group.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's about it. And
a lot of herding.
Yes.
And I'll give Doug a shout, too, even though he couldn't make it. You can find him on Twitter at, he does the Great Time, A Good Time is Great Movies podcast. He's a little sick, so not having great times this weekend, but he's at GTGMcast at Twitter and Facebook.com/GoodTimesGreatMovies. So, and he also does Planecast, and I think he's on episode 3 or 4?
Somewhere in there.
So he does one a month of those, and those are enjoyable. So check Keith. Keith,
well, yes. Do that too, but yes.
Do that too, and Doug, and maybe me. I don't know. All right, Keith. been a pleasure. Thanks for joining me. Well, this won't be the last time.
Oh, no, it won't. It's I like this show. I like the format. And, you know, it's made for weekly consumption, and I like that. And, you know, let's move on to the next one.
Sure thing. Let's do it. Thanks, Keith.
Thanks.